Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Let's preview the episode by joking around. Why is my phone vibrating in the middle of the night? Oh, it's another Aquanetta alert. The official vehicle of the Anti-Woke Podcast is not a paraglider. A study by the finest Harvard scientists has come back, and the result is, do not put black people in TV shows anymore. A robot boy with a wooden eye got up the nerve to ask a robot girl with a peg leg if she wanted to dance. She was so excited, she said, Would I? All right, now on with the rest of the show. Slate Money had a facial recognition AI episode a few weeks ago called What Is Your Face Worth? There's a few interesting things. There's a company called ClearEye that has scrubbed the internet for faces and put them into a database. Every face on the internet, period. And if you provide it with a picture of a face, it can provide you all the other web pages on the internet that has that same face. You know, they can find your name out. But only cops are allowed to use ClearEye. But there's also one that normal people can use. I think PimEye or something with Pim in it. So, you know, just think of like 20-something women who have all sorts of their face on the internet. You could go to a bar and take a picture of her from a long ways away. The lady on the podcast gives an example of a person being found in a crowd. So, you know, like if there's a picture of a giant crowd, boom, it's got all those faces. So you take a picture of a lady from across the bar, you run it through the PimEye or whatever it's called, you find her Facebook and her Instagram, and you go over and say, oh, I just got finished watching Groundhog Day. And she's like, Groundhog Day? That's my favorite movie. Mine too. I just watched it on the flight back from Paris. Paris? I've always wanted to go to Paris. It's no big deal. Want to get out of here and get some sushi? Would I? Peg leg. But anyways, apparently Facebook and Google, they've had facial recognition technology for, who knows, a decade. But they just haven't unleashed it on the world. They're not sure, you know, they don't want the bad press. You know, we're still waiting for the first person to get murdered because of something facial recognition. And I think Google and Facebook want that, the company behind that, to be some other company. But they said something else that I hope is true, which is that facial recognition, it used to only be able to see white male faces and tell them apart. You know, it's like, oh, Asians, they all look the same. But apparently they're using neural nets, like the large language models like ChatGPT. Anyways, it's the latest AI, and now it can see people of all 42 genders and races, which I'm excited about because for years, whenever any, you know, Slate or whatever, media would talk about some sort of AI thing, they'd always be like, and it has this disproportionate result based on, you know, black people. And I'm like, I want to hear about the latest technology. I don't want to hear about race. Anyways, the lady on the podcast, she's like, yeah, now I can see people of all races. And then she goes, but when it gets it wrong, it's black faces. Maybe if you go commit a crime, you want to wear a black face if you're white? I don't know. But she brings up an example of a black woman who got arrested because someone who looked like her did a carjacking. Okay. It's getting a little clearer to me. So the person on the podcast is this woman. She wrote a book about it, and she's been talking to ClearEye and the cops. So yeah, so her stories are going to revolve around law enforcement. They're the only ones who can use ClearEye. So then the question is ClearEye bad at recognizing black faces? Oh, they all look the same. Or, you know, the only way you get arrested for carjacking by accident using ClearEye is if someone who looks like you just did a carjacking. So is it the AI's fault, or is it the carjacker's fault? And I guess woke people are like, well, we can't be blaming no black criminals, so it's the AI's fault. The actual Justice Warrior podcast is talking about California's new Ebony Alert. It's like an Amber Alert for when kids go missing, but for black kids. An actual justice warrior. I mean, he's a YouTube channel, so it's really, his stuff is for video. But he wants to make a living off of what he does, and so he asks people for money at the beginning of every video podcast. And he's kind of obsessed with Anna Kasparian from the Young Turks. So he has a clip of her to help him ask you for money, which cracks me up. Here's the audio.
Before we get into that, thank you to everybody who signed up over at actualjusticewarrior.com/join.
Give me the money. Give me the money, okay?
I guess Ebony Alerts is a part of a trend.
In addition to Amber Alerts, California also has Blue Alerts for suspects who attack a law enforcement officer, Silver Alerts for missing seniors and people with disabilities, and Feather Alerts for missing Indigenous people.
Feather Alert. That sounds like Two Spirits, which is the made-up name for trans Indians made up by a white guy. I don't think we're too far away from, like, the Washington Redskins had to change their name. I think everything that has feather in it may have to have its name changed here at some point. And then the podcast didn't answer my main question, which is, I believe Amber Alert is named after a girl named Amber. So it sounds like the people doing this Ebony Alert got a long list of black girls who went missing, and they're like, Shaniqua, no. Aquanetta, no. Ebony, that's the one. Anti-disestablishmentarianism, Equa, no. I wonder if anyone's ever named their kid with a modification of supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. But so the Ebony Alert, it has some special features. It goes up to the age of 25 instead of 17 for the Amber Alert. Maybe something about developing brains. It includes black people with mental health crises going on. So maybe they're talking about how black people have 2.5 times as much schizophrenia. And justifications are a bunch of disproportions. 40% of missing children in California are black, which is probably right in line with the crime rate, but way overrepresented compared to the population. Obviously, they would compare it to one of those things and not the other. And it makes me think of the Missing Indigenous Women program or whatever they had in Canada, where everyone got up in arms, and then it turned out that Indigenous men were murdering the shit out of Indigenous women, and then they're like, never mind, we don't want to talk about this anymore. And apparently black girls in California are much more likely to be listed as runaways. It's a disproportion. I mean, the default assumption should be, well, more of them are runaways. You know, and prove that it ain't so. Anyways, obviously you don't do that. I mean, I think what you're going to find is Ebony Alerts are going to be a bunch of black men over the age of 18 taking their black girlfriends under the age of 18 with them and away from the parents. So if the alert just shows like a picture on your phone of the victim, then I guess they can do it all they want. If they're like, be on the lookout for this perpetrator, I don't think they're going to keep these Ebony Alerts around. But basically just be a black man alert. And so Hispanics have not gotten their own alert. Trans people have not gotten their own alert. I mean, Feather Alert, that may as well be Taco Alert. I can't think of a good name for the transgender alert, so if you're on Spotify and you got an idea, leave me a note. The other day I got some kind of alert on my phone. I believe it was a test of a national alert that goes to everyone in the country or something. But what's weird is I do not have a cell phone contract. My phone doesn't even have a SIM card, but I still got the alert. And I don't think it was over Wi-Fi. Anyways, I wonder if you can turn off alerts. It doesn't say, here's an alert. Would you like to turn off alerts in the future? But maybe there's a way. In which case, I guess you can turn off Amber Alerts and keep Ebony Alerts, or vice versa, depending on your politics. Statistically, your friend has more friends than you. To exaggerate, imagine someone who has 100 friends. Now, are you that one person who has 100 friends, or are you one of the 100 friends who has one friend? You can interact with me on Spotify. I had some interactions this past week. I did a poll asking, should Israel put the hammer down? 4 people said yes, 0 people said no. Now I'm going to continue misusing put the hammer down if I want, but it made me look it up. So there's put the hammer down, I think brought the hammer down, and dropped the hammer. And so put the hammer down is a phrase from the 70s for big truck drivers putting the pedal to the metal, you know, maximum acceleration pedal. Brought the hammer down, it can be used multiple ways, but it's like at the end of a settlement, you know, like the judge brings, you know, they bring their gavel down. Anyways, they brought the hammer down means that it's the end of something. And then finally, the one that I guess I mean, even though, well, is drop the hammer. And that basically means like crush something, destroy, etc. Makes me think of fake wrestling for some reason. Like, they did a good move, maybe the announcer would be like, whoa, he really dropped the hammer on him. And then there was a couple comments on Spotify. Sexy Fingers said, haven't listened to it yet, but know it will be good anti-woke shit. Fuck 'em. So, thank you, Sexy Fingers. I will fuck 'em. And it made me think how, like, every morning I wake up, I bow to Mecca 5 times, I say, NPR is wonderful, inshallah, and then I don't listen to them. And then Eric left a comment. He said, thoroughly enjoyable and challenging, as I find your commentaries honest, complex, and honorable to the anti-woke flag. P.S. You must be a huge thorn in the side to your woke associates, LOL. Eric. That extra Eric is from Eric. Thank you, Eric. In February, Spotify deleted my podcast, and then they brought it back a month later. And ever since then, there's a computer glitch, and so I have one laptop where I can control the podcast, but other computers cannot log in, and my phone cannot log in. So if something happens to that computer, basically there's a chance someday this podcast will go away. And if that does, I'll recreate it as anti-woke space podcast. So if you can't find it, go look for that. Israel has declared war on Hamas. Let's get it on. This podcast. Let's get this podcast on. There's a woke college student aspect to this. I think there were marches or gatherings at 100 different universities with varying degrees of support for terrorists. A Stanford teacher who didn't have tenure got fired because he made all the Jews and Israelis in his class stand up and go to some side of the room and say, that's what they're doing to the Palestinians in Gaza, putting them in their one spot and they can't leave. And this is tricky for universities. If you're woke, you're on the side of Palestinians, right? If you divide the world into oppressors and oppressed, like critical race theory, then the Jews are evil. Basically, just take whatever you were saying about Black Lives Matter and just transpose it onto the Israel war. And the president of Stanford said, well, you know, our school had an official stance in support of Black Lives Matter. And they supported some other left-wing thing. I don't know if it was Me Too or turning the kids gay. Maybe they supported all those things officially. They said, you know what? It's not good for a school to take official sides on things. So we're going to stop doing that. It's kind of like whites ending slavery. You know, it's like, okay, 200 years of whites owning blacks. We're just going to have no one own anyone else. And the blacks are like, wait, we want 200 years of owning whites. So I think the president of Stanford can see that taking political positions is not going to be that easy going forward, as I think anti-woke gets more popular, or woke gets less, specifically. So they're very generously going to stop taking positions. And there's a student group, SJP, Students Justice Palestine, and they're at a bunch of universities, and they put out some official statements. I think they had a picture of a paraglider on their pamphlets or something. And the paraglider seems to be the, right, I mentioned that, it's like a motorcycle engine with a giant fan blade hooked to one of those not round parachutes, the rectangular ones. Anyways, because that whole thing of Palestinians and paragliders going out to kill babies was the visual. Anyways, that was the amazing visual. So that's kind of the, anyways, that's how you signify this war is a silhouette of a paraglider now. And I heard SJP gets their money from the same place that, like, I don't know, Muslim extremists get their money. But I didn't hear who that is. I mean, I don't, basically, like, I could imagine a student group where, you know, you always have free pizza or, I mean, you know, whatever you want to spend your money on. Like, you could have an awesome student group if, I don't know, Iran was taking their billions given to them by the Biden administration and then funding your little pizza parties. I mean, you know, we're talking downtown Manhattan pizza that costs, you know, $50 a pizza pie. And then 30 student groups at Harvard signed something that said that Israel was solely responsible for the massacre. I think we're calling it October 7th now. It's kind of, you know, kind of a 9/11, January 6th, October 7th. See if that sticks. And some Indian heritage woman who's a student at Harvard said, they auto-enrolled me in that student group. I don't, you know, I didn't even go there. I wasn't part of none of that. I don't know if that's true, but that'd be interesting if it is. And then some group, students, some, I don't know, some group rented a box van with, like, billboard TV screen things on the side, and they drove around Harvard with pictures of the students and their names on there, saying Harvard, I don't know, Harvard's best anti-Semites or something. And a Jewish guy who's the head of some giant hedge fund or investment bank where, you know, all the students want to go get a job because you're going to be a millionaire after 1 or 2 years. He said he's not going to hire, he's like, Harvard, you need to release the names of all the students who supported the massacre because we don't want to hire any of them. I mean, basically, like, cancel culture is normally just a left-wing canceling of the people on the right. Can it be used to cancel people on the left? They're trying, probably won't work. And what's going to be interesting is Jews are the most woke. Wokeness goes along with education. It's not the university turns you woke. It's woke people go to universities and then they network and then they go and take over the government and, you know, the media outlets and et cetera, straight out of Harvard. But anyways, universities are the most woke, even though it's a symptom more, or at least partly. And then no one goes to fancier schools than Jews because they have the highest IQ of any group. And if you go to the fanciest schools, you end up being the most woke. You know, you end up being the tip of the spear of the woke. And American Jews, they don't like Israel. I mean, they're woke. They're like, you know, in America, Jews are a minority, but Israel, that's a bunch of evil white people. And I don't think Israelis being slaughtered is going to change their opinion, but we're looking for, the question is there going to be a backlash? Is everyone going to hate the Jews? And if they do, if everyone starts hating Jews just in general, do the Jews in the fanciest universities, do they go, maybe I don't want to be part of this woke shit? And if wokeness loses the Jews, I mean, the Jews, they control everything. I mean, I'll talk about that. I support the Jews, but they do control everything. So if the woke lose the Jews, that would be devastating to the woke movement. And it must be the internet and social media. But, like, you know, left-wing people in America are running through, you know, they're running a train through these various social movements like lickety-split. Me Too 2017, you know, everyone was up in arms for maybe a year and a half. Black Lives Matter, that went on for a year and a half maybe. Turning the Kids Gay. I think the new one is going to be anti-Israel. I was like, we're running out of things. We're running out of marginalized groups to express hatred for Trump supporters. But I think Israel's the new one. I don't think it can last a year and a half. But I think the answer is you can always find a new thing. I mean, we'll see. I think you can always find a new thing. I guess, who knows? Maybe we'll do Me Too again. Maybe we'll recycle them. I don't know. Guns? Abortion? Well, no. So, I mean, Me Too is women. Black Lives Matter is black people. Turning the Kids Gay, that's trans, whatever. That's not straight people. So now we got one for Palestinians. It's going to have to be a group of people. I don't know who the next group is. I mean, America is racist, only against whites. So maybe eventually that one comes up. So this is the Anti-Woke Podcast. Here we tell the truth. We don't fuck around. So, I like the Jews. I don't like the Muslims. Every talking head you listen to, on TV, wherever, they all have an opinion. They all don't say it. Even if your opinion is, I don't have an opinion. I don't care about it. And I've changed. I used to, you know, basically be like, the Palestinians are like the Native Americans. The Israelis are like the cowboys who went and killed all the Native Americans. I'm on the side of the Palestinians. And basically, all of that is still true, except that I've just changed which one I like. You know, it doesn't, the facts of the matter, even for me, even for the anti-woke podcast host, facts don't matter. You just have your opinion. I just don't change the facts. I don't cook the books to back up my opinion. I just tell the truth and have my opinion. And so I don't know why I changed. It wasn't 9/11. I mean, the people who died on 9/11 didn't deserve it, but I mean, America kind of deserved it. The people in charge, you know, the people who deserve it are never the ones who get killed. I mean, 9/11 was done by the Saudis. I don't know if we didn't really do anything to the Saudis. We overthrew Iran's government in the 60s. Like, totally good. We wish we hadn't. But anyways, America's done bad stuff. If you do something bad, and then someone does something bad back to you, does that mean you deserved it? I don't know. Or it's just a causal link. A causes B causes they did something bad back to us. But all that being true, I'm not a big fan of the Muslims. Some post hoc reasoning here. I mean, one of the things is, you know, they've done polling of Muslims. Like, they'll ask Muslims in Britain. So this should be the highest quality Muslim you can possibly have. And I forget what it is. Maybe 50% of them would vote to implement Sharia law in Britain. I mean, I'm a 2010 liberal, you know, like throwing gay people off of rooftops. I'm against that. And a surprisingly large number of Muslims are for that. And Hamas, the government slash army of the Gaza Strip, who did the massacre, I've heard 30, 50, and 70% for how much the Palestinians support Hamas. I think it depends on when they were asked and how you asked the question. And Israel has two places for the Palestinians. They have Gaza Strip and the West Bank. Hamas controls Gaza. Does not control the West Bank. Apparently, a majority of Palestinians in the West Bank would like Hamas to come be their government and military form. I think they like them more than the people in Gaza. People in Gaza are like, this is a shithole. Hamas is in charge of it. I'm not so sure about Hamas. The West Bank is like, the grass is real green over there in Gaza. So let's do a real quick recap of the history of Israel, because it's so goddamn hard to keep that shit straight in one's head. 3,000 years ago, the Jews lived in Israel. 2,000 years ago, the Romans kicked them out. In 1897, Jews in Europe had a meeting and they said, let's go create a country called Israel. Let's have this project done in 50 years. 51 years later, 1948, was the creation of the country of Israel. And some people will say that Europe was real sorry about that Holocaust thing. And so they gave the land that the Palestinians were on to the Jews to make up for the Holocaust. Obviously, everything's more complicated. Europeans, you know, from 1880 on, they were divided about Jews in Israel. The actual Jews who went there were divided amongst themselves. Basically, every group was always divided. But anyways, we don't have time for the nuances. So 1948, that was the year that they created Israel. And also, what the Jews did a little bit of that year was they went to a few Palestinian villages. They killed everyone, and then they had bulldozers by then, and they just, you know, they bulldozed it. They bulldozed it, so it was just a flat spot of ground. You kill everyone and you bulldoze it, so there's nothing left, nothing to see here. And so a lot of the Palestinians were afraid that that might happen to their little village, and so they left. And then Israel's like, hey, sweet, there's no one here. It's kind of like how it didn't work as good as a disease clearing America for the white people, but it worked pretty good. And then Israel didn't let them back in, and I think all the countries that got all those Palestinians wish they didn't have them to this day. And now I'm confusing myself. I guess maybe that was just the normal part of Israel, the part that wasn't Gaza or the West Bank. And then in 67, the countries around Israel attacked Israel. Israel kicked their ass, and they took control of the rest of that stuff. I asked artificial intelligence, why did Israel want to control Gaza in 67? You know, I think it was part of Egypt. And I don't know. The AI said because they'd like to control the, you know, there's a piece of land with the borders around it that is the, whatever, Israel from the Bible or the Torah. So they want, you know, religious reasons. Or they're worried about the Gazans attacking them, so they want to control it and stop them from attacking them. I mean, it seems to me like, boy, don't they wish they would have left Gaza as part of Egypt? Anyway, still not clear on that. That's enough history. But so those European Jews, they were not really that religious. But I was listening to the BBC this morning, and basically, it has now become religious. You know, why don't you two just get along? And they're like, because God told me to kill those people. And the other ones are like, God told us to kill them too. Well, take their land. One side is God told us to take their land. And the other side is God told us to kill every last one of them from the river to the sea. That's their motto, which is the east and west boundaries of Israel. There's a river and a sea. And so Israel did some bad stuff. You know, how can you still be on the side of Israel? I mean, the Arabs who go about their daily lives, they live the best lives of any Arabs in any country. If they would all simmer down now, they could be living, you know, in a great country with all sorts of wonderful life opportunities. It's kind of this thing, I don't hear this anymore, but you used to hear about how if you molest a child, then the child is more likely to grow up to an adult who's a child molester. Basically, doing something bad to people doesn't make them good. It doesn't make the kid go, oh, when I grow up, I'm not going to molest anyone because I know how terrible that is. It does the opposite. And so that's kind of what happened with the Palestinians, is a bunch of bad stuff was done to them. It didn't make them nice and say, we'll never do that to anyone. It made them bad people. Disproportionately. You know, it's like, that's just a child. That's just a 17-year-old Palestinian boy. It's like, yeah, he's 1 year away and he's joining Hamas. So don't blame kids, but also be realistic. Kids become adults. And I guess it's just easy for, you know, it's easy for me to say, because I'm like, Muhammad is completely made up horse shit. If I was a Palestinian, I would just play nice with the Israelis and lead a wonderful life. Obviously, they can't look at it like that. And then the Jews taking the land in Israel, because they don't control all of it, it's been like a ratchet. It can stay the same, or it can get tighter, but it can't go back. And so ever since 48, every decade or two, the Jews are like, hey, Palestinians, we'll give you some land. You can have that land all to yourself. You can have your own country. And then the Palestinians are like, fuck you, we're going to kill every single Jew. And then the Jews are like, fine, then we're going to take some of your land. And so it's been 75 years, which is interesting. And the amount of land that they're going to get to keep, if they ever agreed to it, which they won't, gets smaller and smaller. And I guess so that's one reason why I am on the Jews' side, is because they're always giving the Palestinians a chance to have a bunch of land and basically showing them it's going to be worse if you take this, you know, if you take the bargain later. You can all have wonderful lives and a bunch of land right now. Won't you take it? And the Palestinians are like, hell no. Allah said no. And so I have sympathy for the people being reasonable. Even though I know the human brain works the way that the Palestinian brain is, and they just can't. There's no way their human brains could ever let them accept that stuff. You know, it's only going to be, you know, until someone's dead, possibly themselves. And, you know, it's young men high on testosterone, and you're like, whatever, I will not accept it, and I don't care if all the women, you know, the 30 women in my immediate family, because we breed like rabbits, I don't care if they all get killed. I ain't letting this go. And so a podcast I recommend is called The Comedy Cellar Live from the Table. It's not really comedy. I don't know. But that guy was saying that, is this going to make the whole world hate the Jews? Kind of like how the whites in South Africa got hated back in the 80s. And so we'll see. It's an interesting question. Has ramifications for wokeness, as I said. And so I put my cards on the table. There's something that the pro-Israel side that they do that I don't like. And they keep saying it's because of anti-Semitism. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think... I mean, you know, you could be anti-Israel, you could be anti-Zionism, you could be anti-Semitic, you know, basically against the country of Israel, or just against doing the mean stuff to the Palestinians, or against the Jews altogether. And Zionists, for a long time, they're like, you're anti-Semitic, you hate the Jews. If you don't like us going over and taking, you know, creating Israel out of nothing, then you hate the Jews. And so I don't know. I just... Maybe it's just because no one I know or have ever met hates the Jews, but I just feel like there's less hatred of the Jews, and it's just kind of a, it's like the race card, and they like to play it too much. Now, if you told me people hate the Jews because they're white, just like people hate the whites, people hate whites in America, they're racist against whites, then you're getting me on board, but then that, you don't call that anti-Semitism. But pretty much everyone I listen to who's pro-Israel is like, Israel gets to bomb Gaza and send in their ground forces, invade, and they get to do it for, well, it's the question. How long do they get to do it for before pretty much the Europeans, but people in America, turn on Israel and say, that's too much, you got to stop, and then Israel keeps going and they go, okay, fine, now Israel's the evil one out of this, you know, this whole situation, take it as a total thing, Israel was the evil one. And the estimates that people are saying, they get like 2, maybe 3 weeks of doing what they want, and then after that, they're going to be evil. So they got to do what they want to do quick. So, you know, no one knows what's going to happen. I'm not making a prediction, but I just had this thought. So 1948, that's 75 years ago, which means that, you know, say you were a young man in the Israel army in 1948, you'd be, you went and, you know, killed some people in a village, and then you built a house on the bulldozed land. I mean, obviously you were not in charge of that. You were following orders. The people who were in charge of all that are long dead. But anyways, an 18-year-old then would now be 75, 85, 93. Basically, they're all dead too. And the Palestinians who owned that land, I don't know how old you had to be to own land, but probably 18 or something, so... If someone took your land and kicked you out by bulldozing your village and killing your family, you'd be 93, so you're dead too. You know, now there were some babies on both sides, but, you know, the baby didn't own the Palestinian baby didn't own the land, and the Jewish baby did not go shoot people and bulldoze a village. And so it's kind of like, you know, 2/3 of my listeners are in America. Are you, dear listener, going to give your house to a Native American? Like, you know, your ancestors might have moved here 75 years ago and you got nothing to do with it, right? Well, Israel has finally gotten to the stage where people alive had nothing to do with it. Kind of like what happened with every other country on the planet. Oh, I've been hearing a new word, decolonization. So Israel was the last colonization that ever happened by the white man, even though Jews weren't white back then, but now we call them white. And so some people have been saying, like, you know, Hamas soldiers breaking out of Gaza and cutting the heads off of 40 babies, that's what decolonization looks like. And so that's an interesting word. And I guess the decapitated babies, they were like, it happened. No, it didn't happen. I think, long story short, it did happen. Was it exactly 40? We don't know. I mean, there's going to be 40 bombed babies in Gaza from Israel, but we can all agree. It's worse to personally, with your bare hands, decapitate little babies. It's gross. I got to stop saying that. And so I'm recording this Saturday. Who knows? Everything will probably change on Sunday. But this is the first big war that Israel has been able to fight when now everything is in the past, and it's just, you know, everyone's innocent. No one alive did it. And so they got this big war, and they're using the word siege. They've cut off electricity, food, and water. And Gaza Strip, it's a little strip of land on the Mediterranean, where the bottom part of it touches Egypt, has a border with Egypt, and Israel just dropped a bunch of flyers from the airplanes saying, everyone in the north side of Gaza, go to the south part because we're about to invade and destroy everything. And I'm going to get to my crazy thought here in a second, but so Hamas, the thing, you know, the terrorists in charge of Gaza, they're an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the thing that's always trying to overthrow the government in Egypt. So Egypt does not want a whole bunch of Palestinians coming into Egypt when they're basically, whatever. They don't want a bunch of people coming in who want to overthrow the government of Egypt and who are known for cutting the heads off of babies. And so, you know, a lot of people think that like foreign aid, oh, we're giving too much to foreign countries. But, you know, the number one foreign aid country is Israel. And then, and what it is, it's just weapons. The American taxpayer gives money to American military industrial complex companies, so the dollars never leave the continental U.S., and then weapons go to Israel. And I don't know if they're number two, but I think they might be. Anyways, the next foreign aid country after Israel, I think, is Egypt. And it's the same thing. The money never leaves America, but weapons go to Egypt. And so I don't know if this is a long game or a happy coincidence, but anyways, America has a lot of influence with all the countries around Gaza, which is Israel and Egypt. So here's my crazy thought. Israel just said, everyone in the north half of Gaza, go to the south half. Basically, go towards Egypt. Now, are they going to let, you know, are they going to let the people go back to the, are they going to let them go back? Or maybe, hey, we'll just take the top half of Gaza. Let's basically, let's start squeezing the Palestinians in Gaza towards Egypt, like a balloon, squeeze them. And can it, you know, it's going to be a humanitarian crisis, or it already is. Can it get so bad that Egypt starts letting them in? Or does Egypt have the whatever to just mow them down with machine guns when they start running over the border? Basically, Israel only gets a chance to really, really put the hammer down, you know, every few decades. They're not going to want to waste this chance. We'll see what they do. And people are calling this Israel's 9/11, although proportionally it's like 30 times more Israelis got killed or something. And 9/11 made America overreact and eventually spend 20 years in Iraq. So Israel may overreact and do something that they regret. And Israel is calling up 300,000 soldiers, I think mostly from their reserves, which is one third the size of America's army. So that'd be like America using our army for a war, but making our army 10 times as big. And then is Israel's right-wing government gonna get the boot after all this because it's their fault, or is it making more powerful? We don't know. But how Hamas was able to pull this off is interesting. There's a YouTube channel, Task and Purpose, and with an ampersand. They do a real long, good breakdown of this. But basically, Israel's been putting their army in the West Bank because that's where the fighting has been, mostly. And then Gaza, they just used technology. They used to have army guys there, and they replaced it with technology. So they put up a big wall, and then they put up a bunch of towers. Some of the towers had robot machine guns, and some of the towers were basically cell phone towers. And they controlled, like, sensors and stuff, just keeping an eye on the wall and the Palestinians and reporting the information back. And also, Israel is famous for spying on people's cell phones. Like, you don't even have to download an app by accident. Like, they can get it on, something called Pegasus. They can get it onto your phone without you doing nothing. So the first thing Hamas did was no cell phones, I think, period. And I guess they did that for years. And, you know, they got all their weapons and stuff ready. They got their paragliders ready. I think some of the people, like, go to Iran to be trained, probably on the paragliders. Iran pays for everything. But anyways, so no cell phones, because Israel will catch you that way. But they did use some technology. They used drones. And so they dropped bombs on the machine gun towers and the cell phone towers. So, I mean, you needed the cell phone towers to control the machine guns and make them shoot anyways. Basically, the whole wall was non-functional. There's no information. Basically, they blinded Israel. And so Israel was blind for, someone said, 36 hours. But certainly the first few hours, and they were able to take construction equipment and just go push holes in the wall and let people on motorcycles and whatever just go on through. And basically, they just, I think they broke through 30 different places because there were some army bases that are close. Anyways, they overwhelmed it. Israel was not ready to try and stop 30 different places, even, you know, even if their spy equipment told them that it was happening there. In Israel, previously, their policy was called mowing the grass. They should have called it mowing the lawn, but it was called mowing the grass. And what that meant was Hamas tried to kill some Israelis. Israel killed a few Hamas people, and that was called mowing the grass, and you just kept a lid on it. And because Hamas's whole purpose was to kill all the Jews, it worked good. You didn't have to deal with them. You didn't have to be nice with them. You could just mow the grass and basically ignore them. That was the plan. Obviously, it didn't work out. Whoops, I forgot the hostages. I think Israel's stance is, we're going to do X, Y, and Z until you release the hostages. And I don't think anyone thinks Hamas is ever going to release any hostages. So you get to do, you know, whatever it is you want to do. You just say, we're going to do it until you release those hostages. And then you get to do it a long time. Also, the president of Harvard got into hot water. I didn't know it, but Harvard now has a black woman as the president. Obviously not qualified, but chosen because of her race and gender. And she stayed silent for a couple days, so that pissed people off. And then when people were like, you got 30 student groups supporting terrorists, what's up with that? She said, oh, Harvard always supports free speech. Which obviously, you know, if the number one thing you're opposed to is free speech, then you say, oh, we support free speech. If every waking hour is devoted to hating people on the right, then you say, I'm against hate. If you're racist against whites, you say, I oppose racism, etc. Well, anyways, this time she only lied about free speech. But still, university presidents having to come out and say such obvious lies is definitely progress in the anti-woke direction. And Coleman Hughes has a pretty good podcast covering the situation. He doesn't mention the fact how Israel took the land from the Palestinians, but everything else he just starts after that point, and everything he says is true. But there's this idea of a two-state solution where the Palestinians get some of the land for their own country, Israel gets the rest, and that land would be the West Bank. It doesn't matter, whatever land, however you want to divide up the land. But you basically would have an A causes B causes C situation, which would be A is Israel pulls out of some place, B would be the Palestinians attack Israel, and C would be Israel bombs the shit out of them. And in fact, I never thought about it, but like every time they get close, they're like, Israel always wants to give a country to the Palestinians, and the Palestinians always reject it and say, we're only going to take the whole thing and all the Jews have to hit the road or die. And I was like, well, screw the Palestinians. There you go. You're offered your own country and you turned it down. But, and that part is true. But also, Israel's like, please take part of, you know, take your own land. That way we can bomb the shit out of you and have moral clarity. We're not bombing people on our own land that we control. We're just fighting a war with another country that attacked us. If you're real lucky, they might all flee, and then you could shut the border again. Palestinians are like, nah, we want to stay mixed in your country and attack you. And basically, all the evil stuff that the Jews did, like I said, that's 48, those people are dead. So, you know, basically, as every year that goes into the future, it's more like Israel is like just another nice country being attacked by terrorists. Well, and as a reminder, the Europeans do not like Israel. The only way the Palestinians can win is if they get Europe, and boy, they wish they could get America to basically, who knows, kick the Jews out. Like, that would be ideal. The only way they could ever win is if all of Europe and America get together and they say, Jews, you got to get the hell out. And then America is partially controlled by the Jews, but the American Jews are not fans of Israel. the Secretary of State, so basically the top dog in control of what America does around the world, he went over to Israel after the war, and he was like, I think he said, my grandpa was killed in the Holocaust, and my father, or whatever, grandfather-in-law was also killed in the Holocaust. And his generation supports Israel, but this young generation at Harvard, I'm sure that was a bunch of Jews going out there. I mean, hell, they're going to have Jewish college students marching in the streets saying, gas the Jews. I mean, literally, soon. You know, depending on a backlash, or a backlash to a backlash, or who knows what. Oh, and I heard someone talk about the Second Intifada, which was a Palestinian-Israeli war, I think about 20 years ago. And I looked it up, like 1,000 Jews died, 3,000 Palestinians. So similar in size to this one we got here. I think whoever was talking about, they were talking about how the Palestinians have been throwing rocks at the Israeli police or whatever, or military, a whole bunch in the last few years. And in general, just that kind of, you know, kind of rioting stuff has been kicking off a lot lately. But what they were saying is that the Second Intifada was really, really bad for the Palestinians, I guess beyond the 3,000 dead. And it takes 20 years or something before you have a new generation who doesn't remember what happened last time. And so I don't know if that's all true. But if it is, then Israel's like, oh, we just have to put the hammer down again like 20 years ago, and then we'll get peace for however long, and we'll get more and more moral clarity as the things, the bad stuff we did, you know, gets over 100 years ago. It seems like the Anti-Defamation League and Elon Musk and Twitter are getting along, of all things. So the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ACLU, like, they used to all be on, in my opinion, the right side of issues. And then when Trump got elected, you know, they got 10 times as much money donated to them, but it was all from people with Trump derangement syndrome. So, like, the ACLU, they used to fight for free speech, you know, became super anti-free speech. Anyways, it kind of happened to all of them, including the Anti-Defamation League, which is the trying to stop people being mean to Jews thing. And so they were saying that Twitter was anti-Semitic, and then Elon Musk was like, I'm going to sue the Anti-Defamation League for defamation, which was amusing. And then I think the head of the ADL and Elon Musk had a talk, and they're all friends now. So we may be able to put some anti-woke wedges between all these organizations that got woke. One of the Feminine Chaos podcast ladies said that if you're a Zionist, that means that you support the right of Israel to exist. I don't know about the right to exist, but I support the existence of Israel, so that might make me a Zionist. Like, I don't know if America has a right to exist, but I certainly support the existence of America. Probably makes me a half Zionist or something. So I heard that there's a general trend where people who support the Palestinians are saying everything that Hamas did is justified. You know, every murder and death, it's all justified. And then when you go, oh, the beheaded babies, that part was justified? And then they go, oh, that didn't happen. And so supposedly that's a common thing. I don't know. I was just watching a video of a Palestinian protest in Canada, and some smoking hot Palestinian woman was being interviewed, and she's like, everything they did was justified. And they're like, I think probably because they heard about this thing, like I'm telling you. And they're like, oh, the beheaded babies? And she's like, that didn't happen. It's all lies. And I believe we have since found out that it wasn't 44 beheaded babies, but it was some number of beheaded babies. And that discrepancy was the confusion that allows people to think that it didn't happen. I mean, basically, depending on what day you looked at Twitter, you would think it happened or it didn't happen or they changed the number. But I think this woman, if she was aware that it did happen, she would say, fine, yes, that was justified. But it's interesting to see that people will not put their money where their mouth is when it comes to beheaded babies. They're like, murder, rape, burning them alive, I guess. I mean, basically, they would not want to list all the things. They're like, everything was justified. The murder, the rape, the burning them alive, the beheaded babies, not the, you know, beheaded babies didn't happen. What about the murder and the rape and the burning him alive? Well, we don't want to talk about that, but yes, if you pin me down, I'm not going to let you pin me down. I'm going to call you a racist and a colonizer. But anyways, they just won't put their money where their mouth is with the beheaded babies. And so that is interesting. Like, I'm pro-choice, and in the third trimester, that ain't a fetus, that's a baby. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, because it does happen. I'm not going to say it's not a baby, because it is. I'm just always brutally honest. I'm pro-choice, and so, I mean, you know, it makes me think twice, but if I'm pro-choice, then I guess, goddammit, I support killing babies in the third trimester. You know, and maybe being honest will make me change my mind. I don't know. I guess if she was honest about the beheaded babies, maybe she'd say, you know what? Maybe all that shit wasn't justified. I guess that's why you deny it. Because you might have to change your mind, and that's the last thing in the universe anyone wants to ever do. Say, I was wrong. I'm going to talk about the beheaded something or others for the next 2 minutes, so skip ahead if you don't want to hear it. All right, final thoughts. I'm recording this right before I post it. The question is, does Hezbollah, which is the Muslims to the north of Israel, do they attack Israel? Like, Israel's occupied, this would be a damn good time to do it. And Hamas, in that thing a week ago, I think they shot 5,000 rockets. They've shot maybe a couple more thousand after that. Hezbollah has 150,000 rockets. And it seems like they don't want an all-out war with Israel right now, but there's also a drip, drip, drip of killing people across the border. And I think something happened in just the last few hours. I won't even bother to go into that because it may or may not be true. But if Hezbollah jumps in, you know, there's some other Arab countries might be like, I mean, you know, now it's now or never. We ever going to attack Israel? Like, I saw a stat. Saudi Arabia was about to be friends with Israel, and then they pulled it, you know, they stopped that because Israel had to put the hammer down on, or drop the hammer on the Palestinians because of Hamas. But anyways, there was a poll, and 98% of Saudi Arabian youth do not like Israel, even though the government was about to say, we love Israel. And so that's the extreme one, but that's how the countries are. The Arab countries around Israel, they are full of people who would like to kill all the Jews. And the governments are like, I don't want to send my army in there and get my army's ass kicked. But sometimes the leaders are like, I also don't want to be overthrown by the people because they wanted me to attack Israel and I didn't. Oh, and Israel has not gone in on the ground yet. Everyone keeps thinking they're going to do that. They've been thinking they've been doing that for days. So this is actually a pretty good time for me to drop this podcast because stuff may be about to kick off even more. We'll see. A recent Glenn Show podcast talking about affirmative action answered a question that I've always had. So about 50 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that affirmative action was okay, right? Another name for affirmative action is discrimination on the basis of race to help black people. And the obvious ruling that they didn't do was black people were discriminated against in the past, they were made slaves, etc. So affirmative action is to make up for past wrongs. But they didn't do that. Instead, they said diversity is a legitimate goal for, you know, universities. Basically, you can teach kids better if they have diverse people around them. It's supposed to be diverse ideas. Obviously, today, you have different skin colors and only one opinion on a college campus. But anyways, I think, whatever. They just, for whatever reason, they said diversity is a legitimate educational goal. So why did they do that? And the answer is, if you're making up for past wrongs, then eventually you've done enough and you don't have to make up anymore. So if you're making up for slavery, you give black people affirmative action for a certain amount of time, and then you're like, okay, that makes up for slavery. You know, you were never a slave. Your grandpa was never a slave. Your grandpa's grandpa's grandpa was a slave. We've made up for that. Anyways, but that has an ending point. But if you say diversity is a legitimate educational goal, then there's no end to that. Forever. Forever you can say you can discriminate against, you know, most recently Asians to help black people because it's an educational goal. And obviously they've done studies and diversity is, people say it's a strength, it is a weakness. You know, it's not people of all races sitting around the lunch table. It's like, oh, there's the white table, there's the black table. People don't mix. They don't wanna. Anyways, that answers that question. That's why the court did it. They did not want there to be any possible ending date. Although, they ended it anyways. The BBC is talking about how Poland is about to have another election, and I guess the right-wing government will be swept in for a third four-year term. In Europe, right-wing means anti-immigration, but I guess they're also anti-abortion. Although they put their money where their mouth is, and they give you a monthly check if you have a kid. The BBC was interviewing a young activist who hates the right-wing government. And so what the left there is saying is that this election is a threat to democracy. And it's this thing with social media where, you know, countries that don't have anything remotely resembling our history of race relations in America, but, you know, in 2020, they were doing Black Lives Matter protests. Basically, whatever's happening in America, it gets transposed onto the movements in other countries, whether it fits or not. But so Poland, right-wing government, gonna win the election, you know, a free and fair election. That's a threat to democracy. That's the same thing the lefties are complaining about in Israel. And in both cases, I think the right-wing government is doing something about the courts. The courts are stopping them from doing what they want to do, and so they are trying to take power away from the courts, so they can't do that no more. And so, that being a threat to democracy, it's really a threat to liberal democracy, which is what you call the system of checks and balances like America has. So basically, democracy is a threat to liberal democracy, and the people who don't like it say that it's a threat to democracy, even though they mean liberal democracy. I mean, it's annoying because, you know, so liberal democracy, they just call it democracy. So then you've got democracy is a threat to democracy. I think George Orwell has a quote about fascism. He said, "Fascism is anything you don't like." And that quote's probably older than I am, but I never heard of it. I'd already started saying stuff like, you know, far right. That just means someone you don't like. Hate speech. Someone saying something you don't like. Someone you don't like saying something you don't like. So, I guess people were aware of that before I was clued in. Taylor Swift's concert movie made $96 million opening weekend, which is absolutely huge. I think Barbie made $160, Super Mario Brothers made $140, but still, I mean, it's up there with those blockbusters. And the audience was almost all women, 82%. It was very young, like one-third was teenagers, and two-thirds were 18 to 35, and the audience was very white. Normally, white people are not a big chunk of movie audiences because even though there's a lot of white people, they're old, and they don't bother going to see the movies, but this is a, you know, white girl summer. I think it was 59 white, 25 Hispanic, something like 15 Asian, and 3 black. Basically, very white, no black. So I learned a little bit about Taylor Swift because of the Hoopla. She's 33 now. She started making hits when she was 14. And I think she writes her own stuff. And so like all these 14-year-old white girls going to see this movie, I mean, they weren't even around for her old stuff. I don't know what they're into. Her latest hit is Cruel Summer, but it's not the song Cruel Summer I know from the 80s. That was Bananarama. But is Taylor Swift woke? I think she's not like crazy political. She could be more political. I mean, she's a 33-year-old white woman, so she's somewhat woke. She did not vote for Trump. I think she said Trump was an autocrat or America was an autocracy or something when, I don't know. I did 2 minutes of Googling. She used the word autocrat or autocracy to refer to Trump. And then I was like, well, what did she say about Black Lives Matter? And they said after 2 weeks of being silent on Black Lives Matter, she finally went on Twitter and said she opposes racism and police brutality of all kinds. Which I would say, for someone in her position, that's almost anti-woke. Basically, here's my wishful thinking that probably is not true whatsoever, is that Taylor Swift is not woke. And so, I don't know if you can take her success as a win for anti-woke, but at least you can say it's not a win for woke. Which is basically, because woke is everything. Everywhere, all the time. I mean, it's getting less lately. Anyway, so maybe this is an anti-woke victory, even if she herself is not anti-woke. As I say, that's probably not true, but I'm going with it. And the reason why is because, you know, woke, anti-woke, it's like a sporting event. And so Beyonce is coming out with her own concert movie in December. And it's pretty much looking like a foregone conclusion that Taylor Swift's movie is going to crush Beyonce's movie. So, you know, we got to say Taylor Swift is on our side so we can have a big win over Beyonce. I looked up her on Black Lives Matter, and she was going out giving speeches on this stuff. And the opening day pre-sales for Taylor Swift was like 26 million, and the opening day pre-sales for Beyonce is like 6 million. And I looked up Beyonce. She's 44, and she's been doing it since the late 90s. So, I mean, whatever. They've both been doing it a long-ass time. I don't think Beyonce writes her own stuff, though. She's not the truly talented individual that Taylor Swift is. And, you know, I mean, Beyonce's black, or, I mean, she looks like she's about half black. Anyways, maybe I should cut her some slack on the Black Lives Matter stuff, but I currently don't feel like it. You might think if she was black, she would care enough to really look into the situation and find out that Black Lives Matter caused the murder of 10,000 black people, and that she doesn't want the 10,000 black people to be murdered. But anyways, obviously, she does not do any of that. And there has been just a drip, drip, drip of bad news for Disney, but it's just a bunch of little small things that I can't remember to tell you about. The Ahsoka Star Wars TV show, not doing good in the ratings. Stock price, not doing good. Oh, well, they were going to make a Star Wars movie to go along, you know, like in the theater, to go along with the Star Wars TV show that is doing poorly, so want, want there. And they were doing a Daredevil superhero show for Marvel Disney Plus that I think they filmed 9 out of 18 episodes. And they said, this is terrible, scrap the whole thing. Oh, and Elemental and The Little Mermaid are both on Disney Plus now. And Elemental is kicking The Little Mermaid's butt. I mean, Elemental is a pro-immigration movie, but in this, you know, in people's mind, they don't go, oh, that pro-immigration thing is kicking the, you know, where we got to get all these evil redhead white people and punish them by making Little Mermaid black. Anyways, Elemental, which doesn't have a ideology that people are aware of, is crushing Little Mermaid, which does have an ideology, which is that we got to replace all redheads with black people. Are Trump voters racist? Well, how do you check? Well, one way is to look at Republican black Senate candidates. So I think Michigan and then Tim Scott in South Carolina, they're black senators. They both ran in 2016 alongside Trump. And an equal number, basically the exact same people who voted for Trump, voted for those two black Senate candidates. Ergo, Trump voters are not racist. You heard of trade wars when it comes to imports and exports? Well, when you do it to people and migrants, it's skill wars. And we're not really talking about low-skilled migrants across the southern border, but, you know, people moving around the world, going to university, getting high-paying jobs. But some examples of things countries have done, like some oil countries in the Middle East, they'll give high-skilled workers a house for a dollar. Nicer countries can increase their number of visas to let foreigners in. Visas for skilled workers. Apparently Russia and Iran, if you have certain skills, they just don't let you leave the country. And America currently does not allow Americans to work in the semiconductor industry in China, part of the chip war. But all that's small potatoes. Money talks. The interesting thing that could be done and countries are thinking of doing is taxation by citizenship. So currently, we have taxation by location or something, and it means whatever country you live in, that's where you pay your taxes. I guess Italy is famous for having a good education system, pays for the students K through 12, pays for the students' university, and then, for whatever reason, Italians with good degrees, they all leave Italy. So Italy pays for everything, and then some other country gets to enjoy having them and taxing them and getting the money off of these skilled workers. So it would be nice for Italy if they could tax those workers after they leave Italy. But the punchline is, there's one country in the world that has taxation by citizenship. Pause the podcast and guess. 3, 2, 1. It's the United States. And ever since 9/11, Europe allowed America to control and spy on all the money that goes around the world. You know, doesn't matter. In Iran, in China, all the money, period. In Russia, although I think not in Russia anymore. So Nigeria is famous for sending their doctors, you know, to America. You know, a Nigerian doctor could have stayed in Nigeria and they would have built a whole hospital around that person and provided 1,000 jobs. But instead, they moved to Manhattan and make $1 million a year. And I don't think Nigeria has any way of forcing America to collect taxes and give it back to Nigeria. But you can see the European Union could make some changes, like for Italy. And you can see why Russia and China and a bunch of other countries want to not use the US dollar so much. Let me tell you about Telegram. So YouTube censors war stuff. They only allow so-called trusted sources to report on the war, pretty much, which means, you know, ABC, NBC, mainstream media. But you can go to Twitter. Twitter is less censored. And so you can go find videos of crazy stuff from the war. But Twitter has rules, too. And so there's this thing called Telegram. There's some guy, it's Russian. Some Russian guys created like the Russian version of Facebook or something back in the day. And then the Russian government said, you can't be putting Russian Facebook stuff out there. So they created Telegram, which is it's encrypted, so it can't be censored. So it was to stop the Russian government from censoring stuff, but it works for all governments now. And so, you know, hopefully you're tech savvy. I'm just going to tell you what I did. So you have to get Telegram on your phone first. I use a laptop. Then you can get Telegram on your laptop. Anyways, that's how you do that. And then you can go to the internet or Twitter in particular, and you look for links that are T.me. Stands for Telegram, I guess, but T.me. T as in Tango. Tango Mike Echo. And you click on those things, and it's kind of like you got a friend on Facebook, but it's a Telegram channel. So you can go to Twitter and type in war footage T.me and find links to Telegram channels and get, I think, what is probably the least censored information now. But the problem is it's hard to find good channels. I don't know. Anyways, you now know just about as much as I do. Be careful. I was looking at one, and then like a Muslim terrorist shot a dog during the invasion, and I was like, I'm not watching any more of this shit. A recent Stuff You Should Know podcast is talking about parasocial relationships. And this is a social science sociologist concept that good chance is not true. I mean, most sociologist things are not. They like to do stuff like, there's more of this kind of person in prison because of, let's make up something. Oh, we'll call it systemic racism. It's that, not because, oh, more of them commit crime. The parasocial relationship, it's a relatively new concept. It's gotten a lot more popular with social media, but I think the idea was, you know, there'd be some fan who goes to the house of maybe a movie starlet, and it's like, what do you call that? Like, you know, they show up and think they're in love, they're gonna get married. So I don't know, here's some various findings that I think are, if they're true, it's just by random chance. But 49% of people can form parasocial relationships. And, you know, it's not just liking a podcaster. It's thinking that if you knew them in real life, you would be friends. I mean, it's that all the way to thinking that you're married to someone you never met. But, I mean, I'm a friendly guy. If I met someone, I probably would be friends with them. So, I don't know. You figure it out. But anyway, I think I'm in the half of people that doesn't form parasocial relationships. I don't think about people outside of listening to them, etc. Yeah, so maybe, I don't know if it's half, maybe a decent chunk of my listeners, you know, you're a real big fan of someone and you, I don't know. Any of you out there, respond on Spotify if you think something about media that you consume and how it would be in real life or whatever. But then there's a theory that, you know, if you're an incel, if you're a nerd who doesn't have no friends, then you're going to go form a bunch of parasocial relationships because the human brain needs relationships. But then they've done studies that show the opposite. If you're a friendly, outgoing person with lots of friends, then, you know, what does it take to just have one more friend? And that would be your parasocial relationship. Well, okay, there is something to it. Like I was saying, I played a video game 20 years ago, and it was Dungeons and Dragons, and one of the characters is a cute girl, and she's part of your party. She's like a friend. She's a friend of yours in a Dungeons and Dragons world. And like I wouldn't want her to die. Like I liked her more than some male friend, basically. There was some sort of brain chemistry going on. And I don't think video game characters count as parasocial relationships. I'm not sure, but you can definitely, the human brain can do interesting stuff. And they were saying when TV was invented that, you know, you got a newscaster who talks to you. And they're either neutral or they're nice to you. Maybe, you know, the weather guy is chatting with you. They're not like yelling at you because they're in a bad mood because their wife, you know, burnt the meatloaf. So it's easy to form a relationship with someone who's always nice to you. Again, may or may not be true. And then the other one I think of is OnlyFans, which is a kind of a porn website where you can, I think if you pay money, you can, I think you just type it in. I've never done it. I think you can type in, hey, how you doing? And then usually the girl will say to the camera, oh, you know, thanks for the donation. I'm doing fine. So that is some sort of relationship. I guess parasocial is a good enough name for it. And then sometimes dumbass guys like give all their money away. Sometimes they take out loans. And maybe that's just, you know, crazy people are going to do crazy things. You know, whatever, you know, you get into OnlyFans, you do something crazy there. You get into whatever else you're into, collecting shopping carts, you get into something crazy there. I mean, I think some of this stems from the incel concept, which you don't hear about much anymore, but what, like 5, 6, it's been a while, 6 years ago maybe. I think there was an incel in California who hit a bunch of people with a truck or a car, and then maybe there was an incel, maybe an incel in Canada who shot some people. And basically they were on Reddit talking about how they couldn't get a girl or something, and then the world was like, oh my god, guys who can't get girls are going out committing mass murder. Involuntarily celibate, that was incel. So, you know, I think people were trying to explain something. It probably was just crazy people do crazy stuff. Because you don't hear about incels anymore. So apparently that was a bunch of hogwash. Well, I think there are certain websites like 4chan, or it used to be Reddit, had a lot less rules. And it would attract crazy people who would go on there and say crazy stuff. And then when you got a bunch of crazy people, eventually one of them's going to go be a mass murderer. And then you shut down all those Reddits, and all of a sudden the Redditors are not mass murderers. Not because it was Reddit causing it, but just now you can't put those two things together. Maybe. I mean, I'm doing social science now on the fly, which is, again, random chance, likely true. But I say all this, it's not the greatest, whatever. I wouldn't recommend listening to this episode, but I got riled up because they mentioned a study where some social scientists had people watch TV shows with gay characters. And the findings of the study was that people who were more bigoted against gays, when they watched the shows, they ended up less bigoted. And there's this thing going on in especially social science, but all science, called the replication crisis, where I think over half of all the studies, period, when some other scientist tries to redo the study, and then they don't get the same result. So it's just, you know, over half of scientific findings are just bullshit. But I was thinking about this one, we're like, okay, you know, what are the possible results of people watching gay people on a TV show, they're either going to like gay people more, they're going to stay the same, be neutral, or they're going to like gay people less, or there's just going to be no result. And basically, if bigots like gay people more by watching a gay people on a TV show, then that means you should have more gay people in TV shows in general. And I guess if bigots hate gay people more from watching them on a TV show, then you should stop having gay people on TV shows. So the idea that these social scientists went into their study with an open mind, and it was possible that they would get a result that said, don't put gay people in TV shows anymore, it makes bigots hate them, that's fucking preposterous. There is no way in fucking hell that they were going to come back with a result saying, don't put gay people in TV shows. At the beginning of that study, when they were just talking amongst themselves about it, before they'd even touched a piece of paper with a pencil, the answer was already going to be, put more gay people in TV shows. So stupid. Social science is so stupid. But anyways, to give that study the gloss of being scientifically valid, they said, oh, the viewer is forming a parasocial relationship with the characters, and then they see that they're okay, and it's okay to be gay, and blah, blah. It's like how business people, they want to do something, and then they do some post hoc reasoning and throw in words like synergy to make it seem like it was, you know, they thought about it and it's the right thing to do. Or you go to war, you find out the war you want to do, you do some post hoc reasoning and start throwing around words like autocracy and fascism. The latest Slate Culture Gabfest podcast is talking about a Harvard professor at their business school. Harvard's trying to take away her tenure for cooking the books on data. And she's into behavior science, which is, I guess it's kind of a business thing. Sometimes they do woke stuff, but they'll be like, oh, if a boss smiles and greets every employee by their name every morning, then employees will be 17% more productive. And the answer is there is no easy way to be a good boss and then instantly get a bunch of more productive employees. But, you know, it's kind of like self-help. People like to read books about behavior science and the easy things they can do to change human behavior in large ways. And the answer usually is, maybe good bosses and bad bosses are just born that way and there's not a single thing you can do. Sorry, Charlie. But that doesn't sell books. So behavior science, it's professors in academia, but they also do like TED Talks and they write books that you can get at the airport bookshop. So it's kind of a popular type of science. A self-help mixed with academia. But The New Yorker and The New York Times wrote an article about this lady, and, you know, it didn't happen unless The New York Times writes, New York Times acknowledges it, and they have acknowledged it. And so maybe the replication crisis where academia is basically a bunch of liars, especially if there's a social justice aspect, maybe there's going to be a little more look at the data that they're all cooking. So I'm going to be on the lookout for that, and it also, this is just happening at the same time that the people are scrutinizing the Ibram X. Kendi Center for Anti-Racism Research at Boston University, which spent $40 million and produced absolutely nothing. I think they were going to prove that systemic racism exists, but it doesn't, so they couldn't, so no amount of money will change that. But I believe that was covered in the mainstream media, so maybe academia is going to come under some scrutiny. In the latest episode of Blocked and Reported podcast, they said that this Ibram X. Kendi thing, maybe this is the end of the social justice, anti-racism, Black Lives Matter hogwash that started with the death of George Floyd. Like, I don't know if this is the end, but that's an interesting theory. And then maybe it's the beginning of not believing scientists when they lie to you. I mean, they did it with COVID, etc. But anyways, something to keep an eye on. Because of the war in Israel, the Advisory Opinions podcast is talking about the law of war. So let's learn together. So war laws go back a long ways, at least to World War II. And apparently Germany fighting America, Germany followed the laws of war. And then Germany versus Russia, they didn't follow them. And apparently Japan did not follow them either. I don't know if that was Pearl Harbor or what. But one law is you don't shoot medics. That's why they have the big red plus sign on them. That's not something you aim at, so you don't hit them. And I guess if the Germans accidentally killed a medic, that drove the Americans crazy. And nowadays you got state actors fighting non-state actors, Israel, Hamas. And so terrorists, non-state actors, you know, they can't fight an army. If they could, they probably would, but they can't, so that's why they can either take, you know, they can either sit down and shut up, or they can go kill civilians. But anyways, so one law of war that terrorists break is called distinction. And that means that fighters have to wear a uniform, so you can tell them from the civilian population, and their vehicles also have to look different. It's against the law to drive around in Tacoma trucks dressed like your average Palestinian, because that makes it hard to kill you. You don't know who, you know, that's why you do it. The reason why you do it is for the exact same reason why you're not supposed to do it, is because now you got a bunch of Tacomas and Palestinian looking people. The Israeli army doesn't know which one to kill. They would just shoot them on sight if they knew which ones were which. So that's called distinction. Okay, so the rule book is 100 or hundreds of pages long, but it comes down to 5 things: necessity, humanity, honor, distinction, and proportionality. And I think everything an army does, it has to meet all 5 of those all the time. So necessity, the stuff you're doing has to be helping you towards your objective. And you know, like, Russia doesn't call their thing with Ukraine a war, they call it a special operation. So this must be a legal distinction. I think Israel doesn't usually call their stuff a war either. Well, and in fact, America, you know, we're killing people all over the place. The only wars we declared were probably Iraq and Afghanistan. But, you know, we're in Syria, we're in a lot of places. But necessity, I think, you know, if you declare a war, then you get, you know, we're going to defeat, I don't know, the Japanese. You can't go kill the Chinese while you're at it, probably. And then humanity, I think that means don't go killing a bunch of civilians unnecessarily, even if they're on part of the country you're attacking. The example they give for honor is if an enemy is trying to surrender, you got to be honorable and acknowledge that. You can't just shoot them and I didn't notice they were trying to surrender. And then distinction, I already mentioned. And then finally, proportionality, which I guess a lot of people get wrong. You know, they killed one of you, you killed 10 of them back. Oh, that's not proportional. It doesn't work that way. But the example they give is if all your enemy fighters are in a building, then you can blow up that building. You know, it doesn't matter how many of you they killed, but you can't blow up the whole village just to get them that are all in one building. And I think all of these things they're going to be judgment calls. And a lot of it sounds similar to the law of self-defense. Like if you're a grown man and a little kid tries to kick you in the balls, you can't shoot him with a gun. But if you're a super old person who can barely get around, and a big-ass young man is trying to kick you in the balls and maybe do some more stuff to you, you might be able to shoot him. So what if you're fighting a bunch of terrorists and they're breaking the law of war constantly? Like going into a dance party and just shooting everyone. That's against the law of war. Well, it's not entirely clear on me what this means, but basically, you can do different stuff to them if they break the law. I don't think it means you can break the law, but it changes stuff. Basically, the whole thing's complicated, but they give some examples. So, for instance, a hospital. You can't blow up a hospital. There's a presumption that any civilian building is civilian and you can't blow it up. So basically, you need evidence that terrorists are hanging out in a hospital, in which case, you can blow it up. That's legal, but, you know, occasionally a soldier will just get mad at the other side and maybe they'll blow up a hospital. They don't care if there's any terrorists in there. That would be against the law. And then they tell a story, I can't remember what's called, ex parte something, but in the early 40s, 8 Nazis, whatever, they came up on the shore of New Jersey. and they were wearing their uniforms, and they were enemy combatants. You know, they would have been POWs, basically, and you would hold them and then let them go at the end of the war, but they took off their uniforms and buried them, and their plan was to come to America and blow stuff up. And two of the Nazis wanted to defect, basically, and so they went to the FBI. All eight of them got caught up. They were wearing, you know, because they were wearing civilian clothes, they were not normal POWs. They went through a military tribunal, which is their kind of military court. It does not follow the normal American legal system. Like, they mentioned hearsay, whatever. They can do a lot of stuff that a normal court can't. And I guess the excuse is, how are you going to go gather evidence in a war zone? So, you know, you don't have to have evidence or something. The rules of evidence are lighter. And all eight of them got the death penalty, but the president pardoned the two who turned themselves in. So they lived. The other six were killed. And those two, they returned them to Germany at the end. I don't know if that was what they wanted. And then they mentioned the Civil War. I mean, Americans are a cut above terrorists, obviously. So Lincoln did not want to recognize the Confederate soldiers as enemy combatants. I think because you have to treat them too nice. Maybe you can't charge them with insurrection afterwards, like we dusted off that law recently. Basically, it's legal. As long as you wear your uniform, it's totally legal to be an enemy combatant. And I think after the war is over, it's like you haven't committed any crimes. So anyways, Lincoln didn't want that, but both sides followed the rule of the law of war pretty much. Every war has someone who breaks it sometimes, but they followed the Union and the Confederates. They followed the law of war, even though they never declared war, or at least Lincoln didn't. And so that brings up that, you know, the winner gets to decide. Like, there was that thing where they went and prosecuted a bunch of Nazis after World War II. I mean, if Germany had won the whole thing, they probably would not have been prosecuting Nazis. So there's a bunch of laws about it, and then the winner decides. So, I mean, it's obviously funky. Oh, and they mentioned something called spider webbing. One of the guys is a lawyer. He was a lawyer in the military, I think, during the Iraq War. And he mentions Fallujah. That was a famous battle / city in Iraq, I believe. And basically, you look at Fallujah after that battle, and it looks like it got carpet bombed. Just every building is totally destroyed. And so his example of spider webbing is, you got a building, there's 10 terrorists in it. So you start killing the terrorists. Maybe you kill 3 of them. Now there's 7 of them left. They leave that building, and then, you know, 4 of them go to another building. The other 3 go to a third building. And now you kill some of them, destroy the buildings they're in, and then whoever's left, they go to another building. And then as you keep following, there's less and less terrorists, but as you keep killing them, they keep going to different buildings, and you keep destroying the building around them. And eventually, you just got a bunch of destroyed buildings. And I guess maybe that'd be like airstrikes. So basically, you have, okay, this part I'm making up, but it sounds like you have troops on the ground, and sure, they got rifles, but the real way they're killing their enemy is they're calling in airstrikes. So the troops on the ground are just going around following the terrorists, calling in airstrikes on every building that they run into. And then as each building gets destroyed, they have to leave that building and go to another one. Yeah, so you could imagine, you know, one terrorist goes into some giant building, a hospital or a school or whatever, and maybe that whole thing gets blown up to get them. I don't know. And then their media analysis is, they don't like it when the media says, say, Israel blew up a hospital. They should add the context of, was that a hospital with no Hamas fighters in it? Or was that a hospital with a bunch of Hamas fighters who were actively, you know, shooting at the Israeli Defense Force? And obviously the terrorists, you know, they know all this, or someone high enough up does, and so they don't make it easy. But that example where there's 10 terrorists in a building, you can destroy the whole building, but you can't destroy the whole village. Well, the Gaza Strip is famous for being one of the most densely populated places on the planet. I mean, I think it's similar to Manhattan. And their buildings aren't quite as tall, but they're pretty damn tall. So if you got a 5-10-story building the size of a block, you know, full of condos, it's like there may be more people's living spaces in one building than a village would have. And then, you know, the terrorists, are they going to do the ground floor? No, you might get them there. Are they going to do the top floor? You might get them there. Who knows? They probably would take the middle floor. They're like, you are definitely going to have to kill a bunch of women and children if you kill me, which is a propaganda move. And they know no one's going to care about them dying, but they're like, for my side to gain more power, we need you to kill some children. And I guess people in Hamas have come out and said, oh yeah, no, I mean, I don't think they talk about it a lot. They don't want your average normie to know this, but some of them said, yeah, we go right to where the kids are, right to where the women are. So you have to kill them to get us. Twitter handle @AntiWokePodcast, and thanks for listening.